Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So these verses deal with that very subject, how that taste is developed, and what is its position in our relationship with Krishna. So these are verses from the second chapter of the first canto. In the first chapter, the sages at Naimisharanya ask the speaker, Suta Goswami, what is the ultimate and absolute good for every human being? So in these verses, these six, seven verses from the next chapter, he answers that question. And it was these verses that Srila Prabhupada put in his poem, Markini Bhagavat Dharma, when he arrived in America. He came to Boston Harbor, got off the boat, walked around America for the first time, got back on the boat and wrote this poem. Like, oh, most of the people here are in passionate ignorance. Why have you brought me to this terrible place? But he quoted these verses in explaining how people would become Krishna conscious, even in America. So what I'd like to do is read all six or seven verses in the Sanskrit and English, and we'll chant them responsively, read them together. Well, actually, we'll chant them together, read them together. Then we'll go and focus on one of them for going in depth, okay? So text 16 from chapter 2. Shushusho shradadhanasya vasudeva kataruchi janamahat sevaya vipra punyatirta nishevanat. O twice-born sages, by serving those devotees who are completely freed from all vice, great service is done. By such service, one gains affinity. Hearing? That's the secret, how we get taste, is serving the great souls. Then text 17. And then once we get the taste, what happens? Shrinvatam swakata krishna punya shravana kirtana kridyantaksto hyabhadrani vidhunoti saritsitam. Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who is a Paramatma, Supersoul, in everyone's heart, and the benefactor of the truthful devotee, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of the devotee, who has developed the urge to hear his messages, which are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Please hold just a moment. Yes, so these messages are in themselves virtuous when properly heard and chanted. Punya Shravana Kirtana. So punya generally means pious activities like feeding the poor, digging wells, or giving charity or something to benefit humanity. But when we distribute Krishna consciousness, we say, this is our punya shravana kirtana. People say, oh, you're just doing, this is very self-serving. See, even my parents used to say, oh, you're just sitting there chanting mantras all day, what are you doing for the world? And they don't appreciate, we work hard to distribute Krishna consciousness, share it with other people. They don't appreciate that, but the activity itself of hearing and chanting, and especially with taste, is itself the highest form of charitable activity, because then one becomes qualified to give it to other people with taste. And then when there's taste, people become attracted, like at the yoga studio this weekend, right? So, okay, so punya shravana kirtana. And here's a familiar verse. Nasta praeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service under the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So here are the two things again. Service to the devotee, the pure devotee, and then hearing. So when those two things are done nishta, regularly, then this is the long-term effect, that everything troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and we become nishta, we get fixed up, where it's irrevocable. You just can't stop being Krishna conscious, even if you try. Okay? Text 19. Tada rajastamo bhava kamalobhadayaschaye Cheta etairana vidham stitam satve prasidati. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. So automatically, this happens. We try sometimes, we find things in our lives, in our hearts, we wish we could repress, wish we could just get rid of them. You know, we want to pretend that they're not there and just like, you know, ignore them, thinking that that is the way to be advanced in spiritual life. But it doesn't work like that. They stay around until this point comes where we have enough taste that we enjoy Krishna consciousness enough that then they just have no nourishment, those desires. They have no reason for being there because they're always ignored. They're always unfulfilled. And then they just go away. They atrophy. They dry up. And this is the only way to get rid of them. Can't be done by any kind of external imposition. It's only if one has so much joy in spiritual life, then the material desires just disappear. Okay, next. This. Evam prasana manaso bhagavad bhakti yogataha bhagavad tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate. Thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all association. So remember in the last verse, passion and ignorance become removed. Then one's in the mode of goodness. Then one can enter the mode of unalloyed goodness, known as the Vasudeva stage. And at that point, there is realization or vijnan, that what we've been hearing theoretically and intellectually understanding becomes internalized and realized in fact. Evam prasanna manaso. Then one becomes completely happy. Vidyate hridaya grantis chintante sarva samshaya chiyanti chasasya karmani drishtaivatmanishware. Thus the knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. The chain of fruit of actions is terminated. One sees the self as master. Okay, so then at this stage, again, any misgivings, any reluctance we have about spiritual life is gone. And then finally, this last verse is like an exclamation point on the rest of them. It's this great ecstatic expression from Sutta Goswami. Ato vai kavayo nityam bhaktim paramaya muda Vasudeva Bhagavati Kurvanya Haitaki Nanim. Certainly, therefore, since time immemorial, all transcendentalists have been rendering devotional service to Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, with great delight, because such devotional service is enlightening to the self. So we'll discuss this a little bit. I want to go back to verse 19 for the purport. Just stick there for just a moment. Certainly, therefore, all transcendentalists, throughout history this process has worked. It's working for me and it will work for you. This is what Sutta Goswami is saying. There is a test in something scientific, right? That if it works once, it should work every time. Then it can be determined as true. So in the same way, the spiritual science that we've just discussed, starting with rendering of service to the great devotees, that becomes the means for developing a taste, and that taste becomes a means for attracting Krishna. This is the relationship between grace and works, you know, that our Christian friends often struggle with. They say, only grace. You can't do anything to attract God's mercy. You know, you just have to believe. That isn't the point. No, you have to do the service to the great souls. That's the way to get a taste. And then when you have a taste, then Krishna reciprocates with the taste. So there is both works and grace. But the works are not charitable or self-aggrandizing works. They are works done for the service of the pure devotee. Then everything comes right after that, one thing after the next. Taste, Krishna's mercy, relief from the modes of nature, happiness, freedom from all doubts and misgivings. That's the science of devotional service. Have you ever seen anything so theologically cogent and complete? This is why it says in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, no other scripture anywhere can compare, because it's the full science of Godhead. What need is there for any other scripture, Bhagavatam? Okay, any comments on this overview? Going once. Okay. So let's then go back to text 19. Oh, I'm sorry, Nima.
Like in the stages of devotional service, said that a taste comes like in the towards after anartha nivritti. So is this taste is a different taste than
worship? No, anartha nivritti is more preliminary. In other words, you're saying like one gets an affinity for hearing the messages of Godhead right after serving the great souls, right? But in the Rupa Goswami's descriptions of the stages of bhakti, first there is sadhu sangha, then there's anartha nivritti, and then there's ruchi, taste, right? So this is the shadow attachment. In other words, we get an introductory offer in Krishna consciousness, as Sri Dayananda Maharaj likes to put it. You know, like they in marketing they say, here's a special introductory offer. If you buy today, then you will. So when we first take up devotional service, we get immediate relief from our material distress, because that's one of the characteristics of pure devotional service. But we may not be, how can we be rendering pure devotional service? We're just starting the process. That's why the service of the great soul is so important, because the order of the spiritual master is itself on the platform of pure devotional service. If we simply execute that order, even though we're not pure ourselves, the activity itself is so pure that we become endowed with a taste for learning more. See, so that is the stage of ruchi deals more with this verse or the previous verse, where it's just sustained ecstasy. So there is the taste and the enjoyment of relief from material distress, but then to actually have a taste for hearing about Krishna and entering deep in those pastimes to the point where it just absorbs us, like Jai Krishna was saying, and he's just pounding his head on the dust of Govardhan 6 hours a day, and then you get transported to another place. This guy, see, he's a physical fitness nut. No, he thought he was going to... But he got this unexpected spiritual result. So that's the point. When we are transferred to another place all the time, this is ruchi and bhava in those higher stages. Okay, so the terminology is a little overlapping, but there's a preliminary taste and an advanced taste. That's the answer to your question. Okay, any other discussions on the overview? Okay, so please, verse 19. Let's chant this one more time, then we'll do the synonyms together, please. Tada rajastamo bhava kamalobhadayasyaye cheta etairanavidham stitvam sattve prasidati. Tada, at that time, raja, in the mode of passion, tama, in the mode of ignorance, bhava, the situation, kama, lust and desire, lobha, hankering, adaya, others, cha, and ye, whatever they are. Cheta, the mind, etai, by these, anavidham, without being affected, stitvam, being fixed, sattve, in the mode of goodness, prasidati, and thus become fully satisfied. Again, translation together. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion and ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart, then the devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes completely happy. Report. A living being in his normal constitutional position is fully satisfied in spiritual bliss. This state of existence is called Brahma-bhuta or Atmanandi, the state of self-satisfaction. Can anyone refer to a verse from Bhagavad Gita on this point? Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakangshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. So this is, Krishna says that when one enters this Brahma-bhuta stage, prasanatma, one becomes very happy, na sochati, na kankshati, no hankering and no lamenting, same as we're reading here. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. In that stage, one sees everyone equally, because there's no longer a sense of let me exploit this person or that person. One sees equally. and Mad Bhakti Labhate Param. Then one can enter into devotional service. So this is our practical experience at Krishna House. First, coming to the stage of the mode of goodness. That's when one's following regulative principles, one is hygienic, one is associating nicely with everyone, not committing offenses, and peaceful and happy. It's bizarre to the materialist. Why would people find this happy? You know, on Wednesday night, I'm doing a duet with my Jewish rabbi friend at the Battle of the Bands thing. And we're just, anyway, you'll see. It's just a farce. But he's saying, what if he becomes a Hare Krishna? I'm saying, what if I become a rabbi, right? So I'm saying, if you become a Hare Krishna, you'll get up before the dawn every day. And he says, no, thank you. So I think I'll do something else. So people can't imagine, what is it? You can't, one time, Hridayananda Maharaj was saying how devotees offer obeisances to him because he's a sannyasi. And he was just saying, this is culture. And he said, if the president of the United States walked into a post office, said, that's my picture on the wall, I'm the president, bow down. The employees would say, forget it, I quit. So there's so many things devotees do that are absolutely incomprehensible to the non-devotee because of this experience of taste that is comes from serving the pure devotees and relief from the control of passion and ignorance. Okay? So this is Brahma-bhuta, the state of self-satisfaction. Okay. Would anyone like to continue reading? You want to have a mic handy?
Were we at the self...
Yeah, the self-satisfaction.
The self-satisfaction is not like the satisfaction of the inactive fool. The inactive fool is in the state of foolish ignorance, whereas the self-satisfied Atmanandi is transcendental to the material state of existence. This stage of perfection is attained as soon as one is fixed in irrevocable devotional service. Devotional service is not inactivity, but the unalloyed activity of the soul.
Can anyone reference a verse from the fourth chapter of the Gita about this, just in English, on that point? One who sees action and inaction and action, is wise among men. So the devotional service is not inactivity. So the devotee is always busy within, just like chanting japa. To the materialist, they could not imagine a greater waste of time. And we're talking about committing like 10% of our waking hours to just sitting and chanting. This is why sometimes in the beginning of our spiritual life, devotees are thinking, whoa, okay, you've got to chant my rounds, but I've got to sweep the floor, so I'll sweep the floor while I'm chanting my rounds. You know, because there's no appreciation of the value of that inactivity. But when we progress in spiritual life, when we're sitting and chanting, there's a great deal of activity internally. There's a great deal of activity going on. One is realizing, wow, I have really blown it. I have come to this material world. How foolish of me. Why have I, what is it that has made me forget my original relationship with my maker? Why am I just so absorbed in the newspaper and all the things of this world? You know, these things are going on internally while we chant. We're seeing the whole drama of our foolishness unfold. And then we're calling from the core of our heart, oh, Krishna, please, don't let me fall back into that, please. All this is going on in our minds and hearts when we're progressing in our chanting. And it's very dynamic. It's full of activity. But externally they're saying, oh, you could be sleeping, or you could be earning so many dollars per hour. I mean, if you chant every day for 40 years, it amounts to some years of your life. Literally some years just sitting and chanting. I mean, you did this parikrama for 6 hours a day, and it was quite stark, right? But chanting for 2 hours a day, that totals up to many years. You'll spend like 8 or 10 years of your life chanting. I'm talking about like all your waking hours every day if you combine it all together. And then at the end of life, people can actually do that, just do nothing but chant all day. So that's not possible if it's just being inactive. We don't hear about any impersonalists sitting and meditating quietly all day. Have you ever heard of that? I mean, can anyone do that? Just sit and do nothing all day? I have absolutely no experience of that. But I do have experiences of devotees. Like we were talking about Ratudvajamara. Ratudvajamara is just chants about 8 hours every day. He just chants 64 rounds pretty regularly. He hasn't taken a vow, but that's just what he does. He has the taste for it. So we may say, oh, well, it's not very productive. But the realizations of such a person are so valuable for us to hear. So there is inactivity. There's activity and inactivity. But there's also inactivity in activity. So it's not that devotees are not busy. Like Mike is out there cleaning and he's taking care of the temple every day, right? So he's very, very busy. But why is that inactivity? Can you say, Mike? Yeah, all your activity in devotional service, why is that also called inactivity? Because both things are there. One is activity in inactivity, and inactivity in activity.
I'm not sure, Prabhu. I'm sorry. Have to help me.
Can anyone explain this for him? Mike?
Well, I'm not completely sure, but I guess I'll entertain it. Maybe spiritually, we're just witnessing, so we're kind of just inactive in that state, but materially, our body's active. In the other way, we're spiritually active, but materially inactive. So it's kind of like you're just switching the planes.
Okay, well, that's one perspective. Clayton, you want to add to that?
Jagannath had a very succinct answer. Yeah. Action and devotional service is not karmically binding.
Yes, very good. Sure. This is the point, yes. It's like what you say, just a little bit more. Thank you. Yes, in other words, there's no reaction to it. So in that sense, it's inaction. Although you're very active, but nothing's going to come as a result except getting this taste. Okay? Very good. Next reader, please. Anyone?
The soul's activity becomes adulterated in contact with matter, and as such, the diseased activities are expressed in the form of lust, desire, hankering, inactivity, foolishness, and sleep. The effect of devotional service becomes manifest by complete elimination of these effects of passion and ignorance. The devotee is fixed at once in the mode of goodness, and he makes further progress to rise to the position of Vasudev, or the state of unmixed sattva or shuddha sattva. Only in the shuddha sattva state can one always see Krishna eye to eye by dint of pure affection for the Lord.
Yeah, eye to eye. This one time in New York, Srila Prabhupada was doing a press conference, and the reporter from a very big newspaper in the New York Times, he asked him, said, do you see God? What would you say if you were asked that question? All right, you're chanting Hare Krishna every day. Do you see God? Anyone like to answer? What Srila Prabhupada did is he referred the answer to one of his disciples. He said, you explain. And then the disciple began answering, well, the pure devotee sees God manifesting in everything that happens and everywhere around him. And then Prabhupada cut him off and said, no, face to face. So here, eye to eye. Now, this stage cannot be imitated. Used to have one bhakta something in Washington, Potomac. He would wash the pots at night. Oh, Radha. Oh, Krishna. He didn't last. So it can't be imitated, but it's important to know where we're going in this process, okay? So the stages are first coming to the mode of goodness. And on that, in that endeavor, we need a little discipline. We need some support. We need to make a commitment and then have people help us enforce that commitment. Okay.
It's not like boot camp in the Army or Navy, which where you're a maggot and controlled 24/7. Right, John? Right, maggot? Did you experience some of that in the Marine Corps?
Yeah.
In boot camp?
Yeah.
They break you down.
Well, yeah, it's such a terrible experience. They put you in the most dehumanizing situations, and then, you know, they build you back up again. It's all for a purpose, though.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, they keep you at that point the whole time. I was, you know, able to do what I, you know, used to do, visit my family when I got out of boot camp and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But so just for the time being, it's like that.
Mm-hmm. So my point is that's a very comprehensive, though, controlled environment with a purpose to get persons to be tough, disciplined, and to work cohesively, because in combat you need that. So in the Krishna house, the discipline is there. It's not quite as intense. But there is a degree of discipline that you have to agree to. Okay, if I'm going to live here, I agree to follow these regulative principles, right? I agree that I'll get up in the morning and I'll attend the morning program. And if you don't do it, then people know, right? And they start giving you looks, like, where were you this morning? So this is it is admittedly a subtle peer pressure, but again, for a very positive reason. Because we're habituated to the modes of passion and ignorance, we need a little support to come to the mode of goodness. That's not spirituality in and of itself, but it's a gateway to spirituality. If we don't come to the mode of goodness, there's no question of going to the Vasudeva stage or the mode of purified goodness. That we need to, we need to at least make that endeavor to come to the mode of goodness. And it becomes very easy in the association of devotees, right? Surprisingly so. Bad habits become easy to shed because we're having a good time and we're around other people who are having a similar good time and experience in bhakti. So that's the inscrutable phenomenon of coming to the mode of goodness. But what lies beyond that is even more amazing. So this is what's being described here, to the point where, as Prabhupada said, you see Krishna face to face all the time. All right? Any comments on that? Okay, next paragraph, please.
A devotee is neither foolish nor passionate. The harmful, foolish, and passionate cannot be devotees of the Lord. However, they may advertise themselves as devotees by outward dress. A devotee is always qualified with all the good qualities of God. Quantitatively, such qualifications may be different, but qualitatively, both the Lord and his devotee are one and the same.
All right, very nice. So the Mayavadis say you want to become God. The Vaishnavas say we want to become godly. We understand there's never a question of being the supreme controller. If we were God, then how have we become covered by the modes of passion and ignorance? If at any time we were God and all-powerful and omnipotent, then why have we come into illusion? Then they have to say such really stupid things like, well, it's my pastime. You know? Dialysis, this is my pastime. No, it's just a bluff. So here's very clear philosophy that the devotee develops the qualities of the Lord. And these qualities of Krishna, they're enumerated in the Nectar of Devotion, 64 of them in all. A living entity can develop up to 80% of them, or 85% of them, these very exalted souls like Lord Brahma or Lord Shiva. But qualities that Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita include such things as his equanimity. Krishna is equal to everyone. Samoham sarva bhuteshu. So then the devotee also develops this quality of being equal to everybody. Right? Can anyone think of other examples? Krishna's qualities that become manifest in the devotees?
Yeah, Time with it.
Krishna, he sets an example. And the devotee also teaches by example.
Okay, good. What's the verse from the Gita on that? Satad Kurte, Lokasyan, Vartate. Whatever standards a great man sets, the common man follows. So in earlier in the Gita, this is a very good point, Krishna in the third chapter talks about how he has no obligation to do any work, but he does work, because if he didn't work, then no one else would work either. So therefore he attends to his responsibilities of creation and destruction of the universes, although he delegates it to his expansion of Mahavishnu. Krishna himself personally is very busy playing the flute. But he gets the job done. Good, very good. Any other examples you can think of where the devotee takes on the qualities of the Lord? Tolerance. Krishna is very tolerant. Can you think of an example how Krishna is tolerant?
And said that, I'm sorry if your foot was hurt by my hard chest.
Yes, that's one example. The devotee was testing who is supreme, and when he tested Shiva and Brahma, they became angry. But when he tested Vishnu, Vishnu said, "Oh, did my chest hurt your foot when you kicked me?" So this is one example of tolerance. I'm thinking also from the Gita in chapter 12. We find where Krishna is saying, best thing is you just love me without interruption. Shuddha sattva, Vasudeva stage, pure absorption. But if you can't do that, then practice the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga. But if you can't do that, then what? Work for me. Yeah, if you're too much passionate to practice bhakti, that's all right. But then work. Earn some money and give some money to Krishna. That's all right. I accept that. But if you can't do that, then what? What's that? No. Well, that's more or less the same thing. But if you don't want to offer the results of your work to me, then yeah, offer the results of your work to some charitable cause. Something, because that experience of selfless work will give you more peace of mind than meditation. So in this way, he's very tolerant because he allows people to approach him according to where they're at. Che, you've read the Bible a lot in your youth. Do you ever remember anything like that in the Bible? That's right. Not just in Christianity, but in the contemporary religions of the world, most of the time that's the case. There are exceptions. But most of the major religions, some say you have to be born in that religion or you cannot get the full benefit of spiritual life. But very often it's all black or white. You're in or out. Good. Any other examples of Krishna's qualities that become manifest in the devotee? Damodar? Yes.
So similarly,
yes, all the time. Everything. It wasn't that Prabhupada had this luxurious, easy life like an NBA player who gets his $100 million contract or something. Now I just have to play ball and then I can enjoy all the time. But Prabhupada had no private life. I mean zero. His life was just an open book, and he was with devotees with him constantly, except early in the morning. That was his private time. He would get up and write. And sometimes you can read about his servants listening outside the door, things like that. But this is the quality of Krishna, that he is, there's no sense of selfishness. He is very much lives for his devotees, and he enjoys that reciprocation of love with his parts and parcels. So the devotee also becomes like that.
that more and more our lives evolve, not just in terms of hearing and chanting exclusively, but just in giving to others. There's the Bhajananandi, whose life is dedicated to just hearing all the time. And then there's the Goshtianandi, whose life is dedicated to helping others all the time. And if you become a parent in your life, then you will experience a little of that selflessness. Out of the attachment for the child, there's this experience of, I'll give everything, I'll do anything. There are stories of mothers lifting cars, you know, doing superhuman feats of strength to save their child. You know, so this experience of transcendent love that goes beyond yourself, that is what Krishna is experiencing for us. And so the devotees in service of Krishna also develop that loving appreciation for others who are interested in spiritual life. And it's a pleasure that we experience right from the beginning, right, of our Krishna consciousness. Is there anyone here who hasn't ever experienced enjoying talking to someone about Krishna, seeing somebody interested, really in, getting some taste, some pleasure from sharing it in one way or another, whether it's serving prasadam or giving them a book or answering a question? I mean, it's blissful, isn't it? Why is it blissful? What is it? That is the quality of selfless love. It's, there is no material reward for it. There's no kind of, you don't become invited to be on the Jay Leno show because of it, you know, or Oprah, you know. From the external point of view, oh, you're just spreading your sectarian religion. But in fact, the taste is there because you're doing something so selfless for someone else. So to be preoccupied with that all the time, that was how Srila Prabhupada lived. Yes, externally in New York, he was washing the dishes, he was cooking the meals, he was serving the prasadam, everything for his young disciples who sat there in their 20s, the 20-year-old students sitting there while their 72-year-old spiritual master cooked and served and washed the pots. And saying, okay, this is cool. They hadn't quite caught on yet. But then later in his life, one of my godbrothers, Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, saw, he was in Prabhupada's room one time and he could not resist. He admitted, he looked at, there's a stack of letters to Srila Prabhupada. So letters from Srila Prabhupada were public domain, and there's, you know, there's volumes of them and you can read them. But the letters to Prabhupada, he said, he was reading one after the next. Prabhupada, we have this disaster. Prabhupada, we have this big problem. Prabhupada, I don't know what to do with this. Prabhupada, what should we do? It was one set of problems to the point where he said, you have made me problem pod. But if we read the answers to these letters, it wasn't that he was ever agitated. He had full faith in Krishna. And so he was always equipoised, even in these, when his disciples were writing, I can't work with this one, I won't work with that one, you know, we don't have any money, I've got to get an operation, what do I do? So this is the quality of Krishna, that he is always enjoying his spiritual rasa in Goloka Vrindavan. So similarly, Prabhupada is always enjoying the mellow of spreading Krishna consciousness, to the point where he said to his disciples when he was getting very ill, he said, I want the benediction to die on the battlefield like Arjuna. He did not just want to go to some holy place and retreat and chant. He said, I want to die on the battlefield.
This senior Prabhupada disciple, GBC in San Diego, I forget his name. Bhadrinarayan Prabhu, yeah, he was giving class in Vrindavan. And he said, now I'm going to say something very controversial. And he says, driver, get the car running. I'm running right after I say this. And he says something about, yeah, he was very dramatic. Became a big fan of him after this class. He said something about the hell with being peaceful in Vrindavan. Prabhupada said that, you know, I want to die like Arjuna on the battlefield, so send me out there. So he says, this is to all those devotees who think, oh, I've done my time now, I want to come to Vrindavan and chant my japa and this and that. He says, no, the battle is still going on out there. Get yourself out there. And this is what Prabhupada said. And I said, now I'm running. And actually, that was applauded.
Okay. Tony is laughing. Tony wants to go to Vrindavan and never return. So thank you for descending to the second class platform to distribute books. All right. Any other comments on this, on these points? Yes.
I just wonder if you can say something to this, like when a devotee surrenders to the Lord, then the Lord gives himself to the devotee, so that's why he's very careful to whom he gives himself. Can you say something like, did Prabhupada, you think Prabhupada actually gave himself to the devotees at any point because they were very surrendered?
Oh, yes, totally. That was the point, that he would be very ill or exhausted or overworked, but he just kept going and going and going because he loved the devotees so much and he wanted to give himself to, they wanted him to be there. There was nothing higher, you know, than have Prabhupada come to your temple. So that was you can imagine that with 100 temples, he was like a father with 100 children pulling him. And their birthdays are all on the same day. Everybody wanted to see him all the time. And he would nominally consult with his secretaries, who are usually exhausted, and say, should we do this and should we do that? And then he would make up his own decision. And it was usually like, okay, we're going to take the accelerated program. There's a timeline of Prabhupada's life that is printed in the Vanipedia, if you've seen that, which is this kind of Wikipedia version of all of Prabhupada's teachings you can find online. And it's an ongoing project. And anyway, there's a timeline of all the places that he went. In fact, his entire life is there, significant dates and years. And it's sort of like there's a lot of gaps in the early years. And then as he comes to the end of his life, the pace accelerates like anything. So when I hear you ask that question, I just think about how he worked harder and harder and harder and harder until to establish Krishna consciousness, and he succeeded. So yeah, he very much gave himself to the devotees. And in a sense, he was even more merciful than Krishna because he did not vet. You know, Krishna is cautious about giving himself to just any Tom, Dick, or Harry Prabhu. He really tests us. But Prabhupada just accepted everybody. So, especially in the beginning. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.